Back here on a Saturday morning, it is the Racing Rundown on Sports Fan Radio 1330. Glad to be joining you after a roller coaster type of week. It's Jackson. Alongside Thomas Gomez and Lou Lombardo. Guys, how are you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
Doing a lot better now after the news has come out that everything is okay. And I imagine we're probably going to lead with talking about the biggest story of this week, and that is everything.
Well, that's right. Byron getting knocked out, or Bowman getting knocked out as the first car. That's just not right.
I'm here to defend Ricky Stenhouse Jr. at all costs on this race.
I forget who was. It was Bowman that got knocked out. No, it was Byron, the 24.
If you can't remember, that's it right. Obviously didn't matter, Lou.
Well, there's been a lot going through my mind, and it's also been a week. But, it was all Ricky. We knew it was going to happen.
So Ryan Newman's okay.
Yeah, he's good.
Turns out he was able to walk out of the hospital and had his two daughters next to him. There was an awesome video that was shared.
Who forgot his shoes, though?
No
shoes on.
Well, what's he going to wear? The racing shoes?
I don't know. They got him jeans and a t-shirt. There's no shoes for the
shoes.
Poor guy?
They were
what he just went through? Get him some shoes to walk to the parking lot.
I don't think his shoes were in good shape, man. I don't think the shoes were in good shape. It was just a hell of a last lap, hell of a last man. 20 laps in the Daytona 500. On take two, under the lights, just a combination of worst-case scenarios that happened. Maybe the worst wreck that I've ever seen in terms of just luck involved. Because Ryan Newman, on the last lap, he was leading the Daytona 500. He had, what, a couple hundred yards left to go?
Mm-hmm. Very close.
Ends up spinning, went airborne into the safer barrier, the driver's side first, landed on his roof. The driver's side exposed to oncoming traffic. He got hit by LaJoy, who had nowhere to go while LaJoy was going... I think it's safe to say triple digits at that point.
Oh, at least 190 miles an hour. You're going guns out.
Yeah. Right. Even if he hit the brakes just a little bit or downshifted just a little bit, I still think that it's high 100s that he's going there. So Newman, more flips into oncoming traffic. Then he ended up landing and sliding on his driver's side. The fluids were leaking. We were watching this, Lou, in studio as I was wrapping up the afternoon and saw that the fluids were there. The fire was starting to go. And there he is just kind of sitting there as we're waiting for what felt like 5 minutes for the fire crew to get there. And they got there as fast as they possibly could. But it, just to put that thing out, it was maybe with all of that going on for a non-fatal accident, just the most bad luck I've ever seen in a wreck. Your guys' thoughts, Luke?
It was crazy to go from the roller coaster of you and I sitting here watching that going, I think I literally yelled, oh my God, Newman's going to win the 500. And then it like I blinked and he was upside down and on fire. That was just mind-blowing. You know, and like almost to the day of the anniversary of Dale.
Yeah.
You know, easily the worst wreck since Earnhardt at Daytona or in NASCAR, I would think, really. But that roller coaster was just crazy of like, wait, what just happened? Like, who hit him? How did he go flying that far? And then, like, you realize it's Corey LaJoy and they start dissecting it. It was mind-blowing. It was numbing for a while.
And Thomas, you had the radio on that you were listening to as well as we were texting back and forth while this was all going on. And also, apologies because your weekend got completely ruined by the rain out in Daytona.
Yeah, you know, we make these huge plans to go watch the race with family, and it gets rained out. So it's like, all right, let's just go home and watch the race from home then.
It was a nice family reunion for a day, and you got to see 20 laps.
Yeah, pretty much.
And that was about it. But when you got back, you had the radio on?
Yep, radio, TV too. So we watched that. Yeah, the only thing going through my mind was it's another Dale Earnhardt situation because Newman wasn't responding to his radio. There was gas pouring out of the car. They hadn't gotten him out of the car just yet. It took forever. And it wasn't looking good, especially when I saw a video on Twitter. They brought up the black screens so nobody could see, and they ordered all the media off pit road. So you know when they start doing things like that, then it's not good.
The 2001 Dale Earnhardt vibes were definitely there for me as well. Even when it happened, I mean, Lou, we were going nuts in here on the last lap. We got out of our seats. We're like standing and staring at this 24-inch television in the studio here. We're like, he's going to win this thing. And then it was complete silence. And it wasn't because Denny Hamlin actually won the race. It was because it just looked so catastrophic. So he goes from being in serious condition but stable at the hospital on night one. Has a concussion. We find out that he's got a gash on his forehead and he was bleeding from the top of his head on day two. We figured it was probably a significant concussion. But then he's walking out with his family on day three and going to, I don't think he was having a beer, but he was going to at least visit Martin Truex Jr., the old fishing buddies getting back together. And I think RCR teammates back in the day, I didn't confirm that, but It was just a crazy couple of days for Ryan Newman and everybody who was getting together on Twitter. I don't think I've ever seen a more positive come together moment on Twitter like I have on Sunday night. It was just incredible.
For as divisive as, if you were following along on Twitter, Trump showing up to kick the whole thing off, I mean, that just sparked, it wasn't even a racing argument anymore. Now it was just people screaming about politics. For how divisive that seemed on Twitter, by the end of that race the next day, let's say, everyone was speaking the same language, and every post was just like, oh my God, this guy, just I hope he's okay.
NASCAR really, was a family again.
Really showed exactly how NASCAR is a big family.
Yeah.
And it's true. And we will get to the Trump thing. We can't ignore the Trump thing. We will get to the Trump thing in just a little bit. But Thomas, when we were texting back and forth, and all three of us in a thread here over the weekend, Denny Hamlin's celebration at first glance to me was, I just thought that he was very unaware and assuming that everything was good. But at the time, I just assumed that somebody alerted Denny Hamlin and he somehow knew that the wreck was bad. You had a different opinion?
Yeah. So when he went into victory lane, he didn't know the severity of it. Lou, we talked earlier in the hallway this week. He didn't have his helmet. His spotter only told him, you know, you won the race. And then he took off his helmet or his headset, you know, to go find out what was going on with Ryan Newman, wasn't communicating that to his team. So Denny's in victory lane, ready to celebrate, and then he, you know, looks up on the TV and it's like, oh, there's something going on. There's something really bad that just happened. So I don't think it was an intentional celebrate, you know, woohoo, just look at me, you know?
Right.
I just don't think he really knew the severity of it.
It was tough at the time because we didn't know what he had known.
Right.
And that's what made it just...
And in his defense, he won his second Daytona 500 in a row. And he started in the back, failed pre-race inspection, what, two times? And, you know, this is his third in, what, 5 years? It was a big moment for him. So I can kind of see where, you know, he had a lot going through his head.
Absolutely. And, Lou, we were talking about this while we were both sitting here, and it was just one of those things. It was just a bad contrast. It was just an unfortunate moment for Denny Hamlin.
Yeah. And, well, the other thing is the story seems to have changed a few times as Denny's been telling it, of when he took the helmet off, when he lost communication, when he realized something went wrong. The story seems to evolve as Denny tells it, you know, what are we, a week later? He pulled up to the flag stand area and he realized when they weren't going to do an interview that something must be wrong. Something bad must have happened. Kept going. Then it was, oh, I unplugged my radio when they did the, just after they did the lug nut check. So I didn't know what happened. Okay. And now it's, oh, I didn't know until I was in the, victory lane that something you can't see the end of the pit road from where you are?
Well, honestly, Lou, when you've been racing well over 10,000 races in your life, they all start to blend in together after a while.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Especially when things are just on fire. That's because it's usually a Kiss concert. I don't know. I'm not saying he intentionally did it. I'm just saying the story keeps changing. I know as soon as Joe Gibbs started talking to the media, I mean, he was just broken up about it. And
yeah.
I think even more was the reaction from Ryan Blaney and Corey LaJoie. Those guys were just, I mean, Blaney was like fighting back tears, trying to explain what happened. And he was like, I don't want to say this stuff just happens, but I don't know what happened. And for those guys, they don't know a NASCAR like this. They don't know a NASCAR where Dale Earnhardt got killed on the track, or where, if you were watching Fox early enough on Sunday, they were showing the old races. They showed the 97 and 98 abbreviated versions of the 500. It's awesome. Half hour, great race. It was so cool. But every couple of minutes, there would just be a car airborne for whatever reason, not necessarily a wreck, but a car would just be sailing through the air or skidding across on its nose vertical. Like it's what the cars did. Well, these guys have never experienced that in NASCAR. So to have Ryan Newman upside down in the air coming at your windshield because all you did was touch his bumper a little bit wrong, I think it really knocked those guys for a big loop.
It's a tough spot for Corey LaJoie to be in.
Horrible. Not their fault. And that's the thing about the whole wreck. It's no one's fault.
Right.
It wasn't a bad move.
It was racing.
It was great.
It was just good racing.
It was phenomenal racing.
It was great racing. Denny didn't do anything wrong.
Nope.
No one did anything wrong in the accident at all.
So then the question then, Thomas, that comes out in the fallout of something that's just as horrific as this on television for the average viewer is, how does NASCAR fix these catastrophic wrecks on super speedways? Do you think that NASCAR needs to look into trying to make the cars even safer? Because to me, it looks like the car did its job And I kind of, at the top, if you want to rewind on the podcast here, at the very top, I told you about all the bad luck things that happened. We have never seen anything like this. And I guess the question is, Thomas, does NASCAR need to fix anything else to make it more safe?
I think they've done everything they can in terms of safety with the cars. I mean, look at Ryan Newman. He's up and walking out of the hospital, what, 48 hours later?
Yeah.
After this big wreck? You know, that's completely different than if we just looked 19 years ago.
Right.
You know, where it ended completely different. So I think NASCAR's nailed it with the safety, and they're always going to continue to evolve that. But as for super speedways and what do? I don't think we really do anything. I mean, we've done what we can to keep those cars safe and keep the drivers safe.
And to your point about 19 years ago, too, the Earnhardt accident happened because he was going for comfort over safety with his seatbelt, and he wasn't wearing a Hans device, which was recommended by everybody else at the time. So really, NASCAR was on its way to becoming safer, even in light of the 2001 crash with Dale Earnhardt. At least one could argue that. So, Lou, do you think that there's anything that NASCAR should do, or do you think that they need to take action?
Look, I mean, the fact Thomas just said it, the guy walked out of the hospital a couple days later, and that was horrific. You know, that wreck was... I texted my wife. I'm like, I'm going to be late. Sorry, but I think Ryan Newman's dead. I literally texted her that because there was, you know, we all saw it.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think there's anything else they can do to the car. Now, some people have said, do you go after guys who are being a little bit too aggressive? And I guess you would look at it like maybe along the lines of the NHL, where, yeah, they allow aggression. Yeah, they allow the fighting, but there's a line that you can't cross. Yeah, you could go down that road and maybe start penalizing people, sitting them a race for being overly aggressive or you know, too many wrong moves and showing that like you're intentionally trying to do stuff, I guess. But at the same time, we're racing, right? I say we're because apparently I'm driving the car. They're racing.
X200's coming up, man.
Yeah, right. Yeah, don't worry. We'll be at Rockford Speedway. I'll show you how to drink beer. They're racing. They're not casually driving around in circles. They're racing. So there's that level of intensity is expected. You can't have the sport without the danger involved in it. It's just inherent, and it is what it is at a certain point. The fact, like Thomas said, that he was able to walk out of the hospital like that, that's the car working. That's NASCAR's safety steps working.
Yeah.
So what they did worked. And it didn't happen on high banking either. It happened on a level, like the straightaway. So what I don't know what the degree is there, maybe five?
Yeah, so almost so. Level. We could just go
so
with that.
So it's not like you can even say, well, what could they do to the track to make it safer? Again, I think that's hit its climax. It's just a matter of, you know, this was an unfortunate series.
It was absolutely that, and if I had to just critique one thing that maybe NASCAR could work on for some of these super speedways, in Talladega it comes into effect a lot more than I feel it does in Daytona, but the yellow line rule I'm thinking maybe could be looked at as something that they can get rid of. I don't think a lot of people are going to be coming from the grass area and the apron going up the track and being dangerous in that sense. Things are always going to be looked at as aggressive, like you were talking about, Lou. Look, they put in plates for these cars because of the Bobby Allison accident back in 88. So the cars have been much closer ever since. It was so that a car going 200 wasn't going to railroad one going 180 on the track and creating chaos and destruction for everybody. So they want to put them a little bit close together. I just think that yellow line rule does become a bit of a nuisance when drivers use it to their advantage to stay ahead of a car that may be getting a run on them on the bottom lane. But when it comes to the Daytona 500, I thought overall, dude, just a great first impression for NASCAR on their biggest day. The ratings for it were up above anything that the Indy 500's done in well over a decade, Lou. When it comes to the race and accident notwithstanding, Lou, what did you think of the Daytona 500?
I thought it was great. I thought it was an incredibly fun race to watch. It was super competitive, especially from guys like Jimmy Johnson running well. And then, you know, there's the wreck, right? And there's always the wreck, not necessarily the Ryan Newman size wreck, but there's always the wreck that takes out half the field. And then you go, well, there it is. It's there's the big one that we were waiting all day for. I thought it was a great race. What bugs me, and this is across all sports, is when it gets into the having politics mingled in where, and look, this isn't a Republican-Democrat thing because Clinton stopped by Darlington when he was campaigning as well, and it was irritating. Anytime they have any kind of official out there throwing out a first pitch or all that dumb stuff, it invites an argument that doesn't need to be involved. Believe me, we can fight enough about racing on Twitter. We don't need to add politics to that mix. You know what I mean? It's just not – to me, it starts blurring the lines, and I came for a race, not the politics side of it.
Thomas, when you think of the Daytona 500, either take one on the first day or take two on the second. What did you think about the race?
I kind of agree with Lou here. I thought it was an absolutely amazing race. One thing I will say, though, about with Trump being there, you know, politics aside here, just having the sitting president be there to give the command, talk to all the drivers, take an official's radio to talk to everybody at, you know, in their cars and all teams, I thought that was kind of a cool moment. And to see the beast on the track. I mean, come on.
And I agree with you on that. It made it feel more important to the average casual viewer who turns it on. And look, Trump is the most polarizing president that I probably will ever experience in my lifetime, just personally. But it felt bigger with him there. Mm-hmm. It felt bigger with the Air Force One jets and the beast riding around on the track. Now, did it take too long? Hell yeah, it took too long. I wanted them to get off the track too, and I didn't need him to be waving. It seemed like Melania had no interest in being there whatsoever because the wind was blowing her hair funny. I did not care about him staying, but the fact that he was there, the fact that he gave the command, that's a picture, that's a video, that lives on forever. That makes the Daytona 500 feel more important.
You both bring up good points. It makes it a huge, even bigger event. I was going to say huger, but I don't know good words. it makes it an even bigger event. I do get that, and especially to the casual fan, you see that the president of the United States was there. That's huge.
Yeah.
That's absolutely massive. Mm-hmm. I get it. Mine is more of an overlying all sports kind of a thing where, can we stop the politics stuff and stop fighting about nonsense like that and fight about nonsense like racing?
I wish it didn't become a fight.
That's where my head is at.
Yeah.
But there's the visuals of like Air Force One landing and taking off like right behind Daytona. Those are visuals that are just stunning. Mm-hmm. You see that and you're like, my God, that is just amazing to see. It's beautiful. And yeah, to have the president on the radio with the drivers, that is cool, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just politicaled out with all the fighting that is out there. I felt like, do we need to fight about this here, too?
It was cool because my mind was solely on the race and the fact that he was there. It felt like he was just helping the Daytona 500. It wasn't the Donald Trump show at that point. So for that, at least to me, I was able to separate the two. Even though in November I'm not going to be going and probably voting for the guy, I'm just, you know, I was happy that he was there. So that was take one. That was, we got what, 20 laps until the first caution of the Daytona 500 for vortex failure?
This was only the first 20 laps.
That was it?
Yep.
So take two happened. We mentioned this at the top. Byron and Stenhouse.
Oh, go ahead. Before we get to take two, I mean, come on. What was going on with NASCAR? They threw a caution, red flag. Called drivers to their cars, then it starts raining again, so they, you know, send them back, and then they did this back and forth.
Yeah.
They were just ignoring the weather.
Yeah,
they were
you're
not
right.
looking at it whatsoever, because as soon as those drivers got to their cars, it was raining again.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yep, it was. And I think, Thomas, because you were traveling, because you were with family, there might be a little bit of a bias with this next question, but
okay.
The debate on Twitter came out when they postponed it. Would you prefer the 11 a.m. start the next day, or would you prefer the 3 p.m. start the next day? And for me, I'm all about trying to figure out a way where the average person can get off of work from their normal 9 to 5 throughout the country and see as much of the race as possible. 11 a.m., we're all busy. Everyone's busy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Unless if you're working in a restaurant or you're working late in retail, you're probably not going to see the 11 a.m. start. You're just going to be following along with it on a website or on TV somewhere while you're pretending to work. So the 3 p.m. thing worked out for me. Guys, do you agree?
I like the 3 p.m. thing, especially because by the time you're home from work, you know, like let's say it's 6-ish, and you were right there for the meat of it. You were there for the part you wanted to be there for, because before that, you know how it is. But that last maybe half hour, hour of the 500, that's the part you want to watch.
Honest.
Yeah, I like the 11 a.m. if you've traveled to be there for it. I like to be able, you know, go to the track again the next morning and be there to see it. But 3 p.m., I agree with you guys. It's nice to be able to be there for the afternoon or when you get home from work and be able to see everything.
That's the tough part are the people who got the plane tickets, the ones who are planning on traveling, the ones who and look, Daytona was packed. It was awesome. It was awesome seeing a full racetrack. Completely sold out. But look, it's a television sport. You got to play to the people on TV because there's millions that are out there. I think an average of 7 1/3 million people that were out there watching on average. And there's maybe 100,000 that are at the actual stadium itself.
Yeah.
So I think that's a little bit part of it. Guys, Logano, real quick before we move on here to news and notes. Logano, Stenhouse, I mean, anybody that you want to talk about from the race itself, not Ryan Newman or Denny Hamlin? Go ahead, Lou. I know you want to. I know that you want to say something about Stenhouse.
Here's where I'm at with Logano. To me, he's started to take that turn and become a Ricky Stenhouse, where he's always involved. He's always right there. I get that he was pushing what he pushed Almirola, who went into Keselowski and turned him. And it wasn't a direct push on Brad. But at the same time, I feel like anytime something kind of goes wrong, much like when Ricky's there, you turn around, there's Joey. And he comes through unscathed because, I don't know, I'm just lucky. It just bugs me. And I feel like he's becoming a Ricky Stenhouse.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah. He just seems to be right there at the, you know, at the wrong time.
Yeah.
I missed the part. I was turned off from NASCAR after Stewart left and Logano took over on the 20 for Home Depot. So I did not see the upbringing. I did not see the first couple of years. And I understand why people are they've got their issues with Logano that go back. But for me, I think the guy's a hell of a driver. I think he's figured things out. The only problem and the only concern that I have with him is whenever he gets around the 18, it's like he forgets how to drive. He forgets what he's doing, and he's just in the presence. It's like the girl you have a crush on. Not saying, obviously, he's got a crush. It's the girl you have a crush on when you're younger and you're, like, awkward. You're going through your phase.
You get panicky. Mm-hmm.
Super panicky. And it's funny watching him try to wiggle his way in and out of traffic and try to work around Kyle Busch, because Logano is a great driver until the 18 is there. And the 18 knows it and actually flipped him off out the window. At least I think that was a middle finger.
He flips him off. Then what happens? He goes up in smoke the exact second.
But if you're going to go out,
I guess.
A good way to go out. The Daytona 500 was a good one. If you have any thoughts that you want to pass along to us at SportsFan1330 on Twitter, I'm Eric Jackson along with Lou Lombardo and Thomas Gomez. It's the Racing Rundown. We are on minimal commercials this hour as we're going to be talking about a little bit more from the 500 coming up, as well as any news and notes that we were able to come up with throughout the week. And it's tough because it was all about Newman.
It was.
But there are some other things to discuss. I also wanted to jump into which driver both of you guys think are ready to make a big jump, because there's always one that is the most improved driver going forward. And I want to see which one you guys have for 2020, at least in our prediction that we'll make up next.
The Racing Rundown on Sports Fan Radio 1330. Welcome back to the Racing Rundown on Sports Fan Radio 1330 and SportsFanRockford.com.
Talking a lot about the Daytona 500 in the first segment, of course, Ryan Newman. We are all so glad that he's out of the hospital and able to at least recover. Not going to be running in Vegas. And maybe the other big news and note from the week has to do with his replacement. It's Jackson here along with Lou Lombardo, Thomas Gomez, Racing Rundown Season 2, Episode 2 coming back here. And we've got Vegas to preview, but also some news and notes that we want to hit here first. Thomas, what do you got?
A former NASCAR driver, Candace Musney, if I'm saying that right, was found dead in her home at the age of 43 in Oklahoma City this week.
Yikes.
She raced in the K&N series back in 2011 and 2012 and was recently in the news for punching a nail technician for not speaking English. And then was accused of cutting a police officer with a knife when he came to the scene. And she was released from jail last Friday. So there's a little bit of a backstory, I'm sure, that goes into this, but it'd be interesting to see, you know, what exactly happened here.
It's tough when you're watching a driver or an athlete of any kind, even someone who plays in a movie, and then you find out that they've got some demons that are going on outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
Without knowing how she passed, I don't think that we know that info right now.
Not right now, no.
Well, it's just, you know, that's a lot up in the air, but, you know, it's an unfortunate situation, and someone who, unfortunately, it sounds like was... It didn't quite get it right toward the end, but did, you know, play a part in the K&N series a few years ago. What else we got?
That's all I had.
Ross Chastain, the number six.
Oh, yeah.
Ross Chastain coming over. Mark Martin gave him the welcome to the number six car, which means that you're now officially part of it, right?
I guess so, yeah. That's a pretty big welcome wagon right there.
It's news for Chastain, who did not have fun last year in the Cup Series, we'll put it that way. He was able to go down back to the trucks and really made an impression there. And Lou, you watch the Truck Series almost weekly, right?
I mean, I try to. Yeah, it's fun. I enjoy watching the trucks on Friday nights. That's great. And then Saturday I get into the Xfinity. But yeah, he did great with trucks.
Easy to cheer for, Ross Chastain?
Oh, yeah. Totally easy to cheer for.
So we've got that going on right now in the NASCAR series. Guys, just quick question for you as we just wrap up the Daytona 500 talk from segment one. And again, if you missed the very beginning, you want to go back and listen. We are at sportsfanrockford.com. Under the podcast tab, you can find the Racing Rundown. How many drivers can you name from the top 10? Thomas, I'll start with you. Give me one.
From Daytona?
From Daytona.
Denny Hamlin.
You got one. Lou, go ahead.
Ryan Newman.
Ryan Newman did finish ninth.
Yes, he did.
As he slid across. That's so crazy.
Yeah, isn't that nuts?
That's just so crazy. What else you got, Thomas? See how far we can go here.
Ryan Blaney.
Blaney was second. Lou?
LaJoy.
LaJoy was eighth. You're getting the bottom of the top 10. Thomas, you're taking the top. What else you got?
Kyle Larson, ninth.
Kyle Larson was 10th, yes.
10th, okay. Yeah.
So we got five.
Lou?
Oh, I know. It's on me. We got five of them. There's five other little ducks sitting out there for me, and I think I'm going to take a dump on this one.
We did sort of take a dump on this guy last week. No, Joey was not. He was involved in two wrecks there at the end, and I think was somewhere in the 20s. Thomas, you got another?
Maybe. I'm thinking.
Kevin Harvick was fifth.
Well, that's right.
I honestly, when I saw it, I was like, Kevin Harvick was fifth?
I'm just trying to think of who survived the big one or big ones. I think almost everybody was involved in those.
Corey LaJoy was eighth.
Yeah.
Just ahead of Ryan Newman.
We got that.
Elliott wasn't in there, was he?
He was not.
No.
We've got an old vet. And a former...
Brendan Gaughan was seventh.
Brendan Gaughan was seventh. The dude was almost in tears.
That's right. That was his best finish ever at Daytona.
Just a phenomenal race. I was so happy for that guy.
I feel like I was making fun of Brendan Gaughan for even running it earlier in the day. Like, what's he going to finish? 100th? You know what I mean? Like, no, he ended up in seventh.
So it was all in fun. Brendan Gaughan with a good one. So we are missing the third place driver, the fourth place driver, and the sixth place driver.
Third place was...
I'll give you number six. It was Clint Bowyer.
Oh, okay.
Good finish for him.
Yeah.
So now we're looking for the third place and the fourth place driver. Now, one is relatively new. He did win a rainout and made the playoffs only in his first season, but I'm a huge fan of this guy and picked him as a dark horse last week, so that's why I'm excited.
Not Justin Haley.
No. Justin Haley, 13th, though. Stumped.
Bowman?
Chris Buescher.
Oh, that's right, Buescher.
Chris Buescher in third place.
Oh, yeah, Chicago, man.
He was pushing there for Newman there at one of the restarts.
Yeah, he was.
And then number four was David freaking Reagan. So we had Denny Hamlin, Ryan Blaney, Chris Buescher, David Reagan, Kevin Harvick, Bowyer, Brendan Gaughan, Corey LaJoy, Ryan Newman, and Kyle Larson. Some other notables, we mentioned Justin Haley, last year's July winner during a rain delay was 13th. John Hunter Nemechek, maybe the Rookie of the Year candidate. Well, he's definitely a candidate. Anybody who's a rookie really is, but a hell of a run. He finished 11th. Chase Elliott was 17th. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., the fastest guy in qualifying, was 20th. He ended up coming back and was actually running at the end, which was a success based on
an accomplishment.
Some of the things that were happening in the beginning for him. Another question I want to bring along to you guys, too, as I was kind of diving into Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know who the most popular driver is right now? The one that won the award?
Chase Elliott.
2 years in a row.
Yeah.
You got it, Thomas. Chase Elliott. Who was the last driver not named Elliott or Earnhardt to win most popular driver? Any guesses, Lou?
Huh. Well.
We're going back in time here. It's been 30 years.
Wow.
Not a Petty.
It was not a Petty, although Richard was in 1978. There's only been seven most popular drivers since Richard Petty. 42 years ago.
Mark Martin?
Darrell Waltrip in 1990. But yeah, only five since Bobby Allison. And I found that and I just realized because Earnhardt won, but the year that Dale Earnhardt Sr. won was 2001, which makes sense. Earnhardt Jr. had a string of about 10 years. Bill Elliott was maybe 12 years. You have Chase Elliott now. So the last time that someone not named Elliott or Earnhardt was 30 years ago. And I just found that to be kind of a... you know, an interesting nugget, especially when we're talking about people who we think might be the most improved drivers going into this year, which I wanted to bring up. This is really when the NASCAR season begins to me. This is when the grind of the schedule begins, is when we start going to these mile and a half tracks. I mean, Daytona's fun. It's a show, but it's kind of random. I mean, we just went over the top 10. But now this is when the real meat of the season begins. And when we're looking at people who are going to be most improved for this year, I'm going to just go out on a limb and think that Chase Elliott is going to be that guy that I'll pick. New Camaro, I think, is catching up to the Toyota and the Ford. I think that Chase Elliott's starting to run a lot better on multiple different track types. He's in season number 5 right now, and I feel like he can improve on the back-to-back years with 3 wins. So Chase Elliott, I'll take for my most improved driver, at least a prediction at this point going into the meats of the 2020 season. Thomas, who would you pick?
Well, I kind of went a different direction with this. I was looking at Christopher Bell stepping into the 95 this year.
Okay.
He really impressed me with the 500. He was running with the Toyotas who, wherever they ran, if they were in the back and their front, he was right there with them and he was holding his own. So I'm interested to see how his season's going to play out. You know, he's brand new to the Cup Series. I want to see if he can kind of hold his own, maybe win a couple races this year.
It's going to be weird not assuming the 95 is to Benedetto.
Mm-hmm. And I also have an eye on him in the 21, you know, with his first year in that car and a little bit better equipment. And let's see what happens.
Yeah, it'll be pretty interesting to see. Lou, who do you think is going to make that jump in 2020?
Byron. I think the 24. I think a year under his belt with Chad. And he did all right during speed weeks, you know, and until Ricky took him out. I mean, it wasn't out of the 500.
Didn't he win the first duel?
He won the second duel.
Second duel.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? It was the second one because Joey won the first one, didn't he?
Yeah, it was the second one.
I think Byron has some potential there. He's got, I mean, clearly a crew chief that's got the pedigree, but I think this could be a big year for him. Winning the championship, I don't know about that, but I could see him definitely getting his first win, maybe winning 2 races this year.
Yeah, William Byron is, it's kind of eluded him a little bit. He's almost in the same position that Chase Elliott was in, maybe in the first 2 or 3 years or so before Chase Elliott got that first win. You remember he was finishing second a lot, and it looked like he was on the verge. Byron has shown flashes, although not quite as significant as Chase Elliott has. I mean, you're working with probably the best crew chief in all of NASCAR, maybe
easily,
history.
Yeah, right.
And we're easily not just saying that because we're biased, right?
Hometown boy done good.
But he's with Chad Knaus, of course, and I could see William Byron making a big jump here. You think maybe 2 wins this year?
Yeah, I think he could squeak out 2 wins. You know, maybe one decent run at a mile and a halfer, and then maybe he gets a weird one in there, whether it's a, you know, one of the super short tracks, or he gets a weird, you know, road course win at, like a Watkins, much like Chase did to get things kicked off. But I feel like once, and this I think was the case with Chase, once he gets that first win,
you're unstoppable.
I feel like he's going to be like, okay, mm-hmm, here's the confidence I needed. I have the talent. I have the people behind me. I think here comes that confidence is going to come out. You're going to see him just kind of pull it off a second time.
That would be huge for the Hendrick team in general,
yeah,
as well.
Because, and that's what happened for Chase, though. He mm-hmm got that one win, and then it was like, okay,
let's,
this is what it's
it
like. All right, yep, let's do this again. You know, and I think it's been nothing but an up trajectory for him from there.
I mean, you have the legend in that stable right now. You've got the guy who is probably going to be the one carrying the mantle going forward. Mm-hmm. They need to get Bowman or they need to get Byron on track. And it could be Bowman. I mean, Bowman finished second like 47 times in a row last year and then ended up winning in Chicagoland. So they could get Byron going. I mean, Chevy's right back in this thing. Thomas, I want to go back and just talk about yours real quick. A question that just came into my mind. Christopher Bell and Matt DiBenedetto.
Uh-huh.
I think both drivers are going to win a race in their careers. Who do you think wins first?
Oh. My gut wants to say Matt. I think he's going to do it because last year when we kind of were getting the rumors that he was going to be out, he put his career, he had his career in his forefront every single time he went out on that track, and he was running extremely well. He was trying to prove himself to other teams, I guess, other owners to say, hey, I need a ride, you know? So I feel like if he continues with that momentum he had last year, he'll find his way to victory lane.
Lou?
I am going to say Christopher Bell. I think Christopher Bell may find, I'm not going to say he's going to have a better career over at the end of it than Matt DiBenedetto, but he may find victory lane before Matt does. And that's just my gut, and it's just me thinking this NASCAR can be weird and really cruel sometimes and not work the way it's supposed to. I still think Matt DiBenedetto is an amazing driver. I think, you know, what he did at the end of last season was awesome.
Yeah.
Watching him do that. But I don't know. I think Christopher Bell just kind of has a little bit of that luck on his side also. No, that's okay. He did really well in the Xfinity series, and I think a little bit of what he did in the Xfinity series was luck, and I don't know. I feel like he sails under that star sometimes.
Does it come down to a Penske versus Gibbs thing then? Because they're each affiliate teams of Penske and Gibbs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, look, I mean, when you're at that point, you're splitting hairs, right? You're with the two biggest, so mm-hmm. it's not like you're... okay, you're Penske, you're running on the Fords, you're Gibbs, you're running on the Toyotas. Both of those, it's not like one of them has a Chevy and we're going, well, I don't know, the car's a factor. It seems to be that the Fords and Toyotas are not a factor in the whole mix of things. So I don't think it comes down so much to what team you're with. I think Christopher Bell just, I think he's got one of those lucky, he's one of those lucky drivers.
To Benedetto on a short track this year, though, I'm going to be interested to see with some of the way that they're changing the packages for the cars that they just announced prior to. I mean, the horsepower, they're going to be scaling back on those. They're going to make it rely more on the driver for these short tracks. And De Benedetto was really vocal and really happy when that news came out. So when I saw the guy leading with 12 laps to go until Denny took over in Bristol last year, I just feel like De Benedetto might be in the mix at the very end this year. But either way, I mean, you can't really go wrong. They're both, I think both of them are going to win a race at some point, so it's interesting to kick around. I'll go to Benedetto on that just to break the tie here, but something just to kick around as we are going through the racing rundown here. Vegas coming up next week. Thomas, the track that you've been?
I've been there, yeah. It's pretty cool. I love the, I don't want to say the backdrop, but, you know, the scenery as you're sitting at the track.
I want really to cool. talk about that a little bit more and just the difference between what it looks like on TV versus maybe what the experience is like on the track. Plus, we'll pick our three drivers coming up as we could talk about something that's not Daytona related. We're getting into the second race here of the NASCAR season, so we're going to break that down. Up next, it's the Racing Rundown.
We'll take two tires and a splash of fuel. It's the Racing Rundown on Sports Fan Radio 1330. It's a big weekend in NASCAR. Jackson and Thomas are here to talk about it.
And Lou.
Welcome back to the Racing Rundown on Sports Fan Radio 1330 and SportsFanRockford.com.
You know, it's always the little things you forget throughout the course of the week. I was meaning to get to that.
I will live.
That's Lou. He's joining us this year. It's the Racing Rundown. I'm Jackson. He's Thomas.
Hey.
You were at Vegas last year, or 2 years ago? Wow.
15, maybe?
Okay, so it's been a couple years. Well, Vegas now, since then, going to the two races per week. We want to talk about this as Vegas number one is up. And it's now the second race in the NASCAR schedule, which is the first change that we've seen in the season. And there's going to be plenty more coming up. But for right now, I want to talk about Las Vegas and our expectations for the race. It's been kind of rough on television. They're trying to make some improvements. Most of the mile-and-a-half racetracks and the setups have made for more compelling racing, but Vegas is still, to me, lacking a little bit. So, Lou, what kind of expectations do you have going into Vegas?
I have a feeling that we're going to see a quality race because I feel like the drivers are going to come out with something to prove after what happened to Ryan Newman and make sure fans know that, hey, we're not taking it easy just because of what happened. In fact, they may be a little bit more, you know, pushing it a little bit further just to try and show that, like, just because what happened doesn't mean we're toning down NASCAR. Don't turn away. Don't think we're going to be gun-shy about this. I think we're going to see a damn good race out of Vegas. I know it's one of those odd tracks, but where, you know, we had great, like you just said, the mile and a half last year were the best.
Yeah.
The best they've been in forever, I think it's fair to say. But Vegas, I don't know. You're right. It did lose a little of that. I'm like, I don't know. They're still trying to figure the cars out last year by the time they got to Vegas. So maybe we see a different race run now that they know how these cars work on those tracks a little bit better. They have a whole season under their belt with them. So I think we're going to see a great race.
Same package, year two, race number three. Thomas, what are your expectations going into this one?
Actually, I think Lou just said it. I think with the last year and the new package, I think they've had a little bit of time to figure it out. So coming back to Vegas, I feel like we might have a little bit of a better show compared to last year. They weren't quite sure how it was going to handle. And from my experience just being at the track, it was a snooze fest. And I think it was a snooze fest a little bit on TV last year.
Okay.
So I feel like now that they've kind of gotten things figured out, we might see a better race.
The pre-race, when you were there at least, and we're talking about going on maybe 5 years, four or five years or so.
Something like that.
It looks fun on television. It looks like an event to go to once you're out in Vegas amongst the many things you could do. But when you go to the race prior to it, is that racetrack itself and the experience going in when you're walking up, when you see everything on the outside, is that superior to other tracks you've been to, or is it somewhere in the middle? How would you rate it?
It's one of my favorite tracks I've been to, simply because of the neon garage. You get to get right up next to the cars practically. And a lot of tracks nowadays are kind of adopting that setup. So they're kind of revamping their infields so fans can get right next to the cars. Another thing I really liked was that the driver's meeting was held outside. So all the fans that had pit road access pit passes?
Yeah.
So you can get right up next to those drivers for the driver meeting. And they have like this little grid walk where you can get autographs and everything, which is pretty cool.
That is cool. Did you go to, so it must have been a spring race back then?
It was. It was March. It was my spring break.
How was the weather?
It was awesome. I wanted to move out there because it was so nice. But 70 to 80 degrees in March is okay, but, 90, 100, whatever in summer, no thanks.
And they'll tell you, oh, it's dry heat.
Yeah,
that's right. The thing about Vegas is it's dry heat. So we've got the schedule changes. We've got we've got two races coming up in Vegas. This is number one. Crazy thing about the track, and at least the races since stage racing has come out, the driver who has won stage two at Vegas every year that the stage has been out so far that we've had stages has gone on to win the race. So maybe that trend continues here. We've seen a lot of green flag racing, which can be good. But I like to see the restarts with this new package. We'll see exactly what happens. When it comes down to the pick three, guys, Lou, you want to give me three of your drivers, two that you think are going to be in it, and then one dark horse.
All right. I'm going to say let's take Kyle Busch out of the mix because it's his home track. You know how he runs there. And I think it's too easy to just say Kyle Busch every time we talk about Vegas. So I'm going to take him out of the mix. I'm going to say Brad Keselowski, Kevin Harvick, who runs really well at Vegas also, and Byron. I'm putting my boy Byron on there.
You're pretty high on William Byron.
I am pretty high on William Byron. I think this could be a big year for him. I really do. Will it start at Vegas? I don't know, but I liked the little bit we got to see at Daytona, and I'm wondering if it kind of carries over, and he's got that little bit of an edge after Ricky Stenhouse Jr. did what he does and took him out of the race. I want to see what he does.
Hearsay. I mean, that's all.
Yeah,
that's arbitrary.
No, it's just because he does it. But I want to see what he does in Vegas. I think he has a shot.
Kevin Harvick, you said, was your second one?
Yeah, I like Harvick at Vegas. I do. I like Harvick at Atlanta, Vegas, and Phoenix. I feel like those are three tracks where Kevin Harvick really gets the job done.
And him and Brad, out of all the drivers in the last few years, I think since 2017, Truex has the most wins on mile and a half tracks, but Harvick and Keselowski are both right behind him at 2 and 3. Thomas, any of those drivers on your list?
Almost all of them, actually. I went with Keselowski and Harvick. But Jackson, I'm actually going with your dark horse from last year that you picked a lot, and that is Daniel Suarez. He finished within the top 10 in stage one for both the races last year, qualified out front, and I'm interested to see what he can do with his new team.
Yeah.
I feel bad for him.
I do too.
Somebody get that guy a consistent job.
And it sucks he missed the 500 too.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
And listening to his post-qualifying, can't even say post-race, but post, well, I guess the duels, but just listening to him after the fact, how he was going to be really sad watching it at home on television, and dude.
Yeah, but he stayed and he did stuff for Fox. I think it was Fox on social media.
That's cool.
Yeah, so he was still there. Hosting some sort of live watch party thing.
Suarez is going to be this year's DiBenedetto for me.
I think he deserves more credit than he gets. I think he deserves a better shot than he's gotten. I'm 100% with you on that.
The underdog role is, I don't know, but I like that dark horse for you, Thomas. And then you said also Keselowski and Harvick?
Yes.
Man, okay. Yeah. All right.
Who do you have?
Let's switch it up here. I'm going to go with Kevin Harvick.
Ooh, bold.
Who struggled last year for the first half of the season. It seemed like it took him forever to win a race, right?
Coming off a year where he ran or won so many in a row.
Yeah, an average finish of like 1.6 or something the year prior. I don't think it's going to happen again. He's second in wins, as I mentioned, since 2017 for mile and a halfers. I think he's going to be in it in the end. You guys took Keselowski. I'm going to take the guy that everybody's starting to pile on here, who's got Keselowski's crew chief this year, and Joey Logano, who led 86 laps en route to a win last March here. as Joey really started out at the beginning of the season great last year too. Interested to see how he follows it up. Plus, he upgraded with Paul Wolf. I do believe in that. And then also keep an eye out. And here's another guy that I chose a lot last year, Thomas. Any guesses?
Eric Almirola.
Eric Almirola is the dark horse here.
Look, best car at Daytona.
Guy had a rough Daytona 500 last year. Then he rattled off six top tens last season. Finished 7th and 13th in Vegas in 2019. He finished 10th and 6th in 2018. And he finished 14th before he had the back issues for Richard Petty Motorsports back in 2017. Eric Almirola, man. Dude, he's got to win another race here at some point. He's got one or two, right?
Yeah.
I really thought he was going to have a big year last year, and it turned out where he kind of just completely fell apart.
He almost had a big weekend last weekend.
He really did.
He looked all right in the 500.
Yeah.
His car was moving. So, I don't know. That's, to me, that says a lot. That's kind of why I'm looking at Byron, too. I felt like he showed a little bit there, and that's why I picked him. So, yeah, I think Almirola is a smart pick.
I was thinking about Martin Truex Jr. I was thinking about going with him, but I just got to wait and see how life is going to be without Cole Pearn.
Very curious. Yeah.
I mean, do you think that he's going to fall? Or do you think he'll have kind of a similar year, Thomas, just gut feeling?
My gut says he's not going to do as well as he did when he had Cole Pearn, but I feel like it's not going to be that big of a gap. He's maybe win one less race.
It's tough to maintain an excellence the way that he has. I mean, he's gotten 5-6 wins, it seems like, the last few years.
Well, he also turned into all of a sudden a short track racer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Like that came out of nowhere. It's a guy who never won on a short track, and then he couldn't stop winning on short tracks.
Uh-huh. Road courses and all that. I mean, he's phenomenal at them now.
Yeah, it's weird. So I think you're right, Thomas. I don't think it's going to be a huge drop off, but I think they're still feeling each other out.
Yeah, for sure.
If you've got things to do on Sunday, just remember the Stage 2 winner at Vegas has won all 5 races since stage inception. I will repeat that here before we go. But as far as everything else, I think that covers it for the week. Las Vegas coming up. I'm excited to see exactly what this package looks like in year 2, any kind of tweaks that they can make. And we've got a lot more racing coming up in 2019. Also, just announced, too, and we'll share this on our social media if you want to follow us, at SportsFan1330. But Byron Dragway came out with their schedule, Thomas.
Nice.
We've gone over it and kind of highlighted some of the bold stuff here. So we'll put that up at SportsFan1330 as we could start to look ahead to some warmer temperatures and racing happening locally here. It's going to be here before we know it. For Lou Lombardo, Thomas Gomez, I'm Eric Jackson. Enjoy the weekend. We'll be back next week on Saturday, 10 a.m., to talk all things racing on the Racing Rundown.